Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to cover, I think, what is a much ignored subject. It is truly a paradigm unto itself in terms of unraveling the causes of mysterious and complex disorders, as well as common degenerative disorders. It's a missing perspective on disease that I think we really need to know about. We're going to talk to an expert. He's Dr. Michael Gelb. Dr. Gelb is an innovator in sleep apnea, in painful TMJ disorders, and other head and neck pain disorders. He studied breathing-related sleep disorders, and he is specialized in how they relate to fatigue, mental focus, pain, and all the deleterious effects these can have on a person's life. He is the director of the Gelb Center. And actually, he is second generation because his father was truly a pioneer in the industry. I used to refer patients all the time to his father, Dr. Gelb, who was one of the originators of the term TMJ.
Right.
And his son, Dr. Michael Gelb, is carrying on in the tradition, and he is truly innovative in his approach to airway disorders. He's author of a book, along with Dr. Howard Hinden, entitled GASP, aptly titled GASP, GASP. So welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast, Dr. Gelb. It's a pleasure having you on board.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman. It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay, great. So what are we talking about, and how did you evolve from, you grew up with a doctor, your father, who was a great role model. He was a pioneer in the diagnosis of TMJ, which is the cause of many types of problems. It's the cause of jaw tension leading to chronic headaches and myofascial pain. And your mom, I guess, I'm reading the bio, was also a myofascial pain expert. But this evolved into an even broader perspective on various health problems that you, in collaboration with Dr. Hinden, have elaborated on in the new book.
Exactly. So I didn't really at first want anything to do with sleep. I thought I was going to be TMJ and facial pain and headaches. And one day when I went to just started taking over the program at NYU, I had two fabulous guest lecturers come in from across the country. And I realized that this really was an area, that dentists really should be involved with, as well as other, you know, medical practitioners. And I remember my dad would go out lecturing at fatigue conferences, and he would say, you know, we got rid of the pain, we got rid of the TMJ problems, the clicking, and they wore our appliance, and they slept better, and the fatigue was gone. We fixed the TMJ, and now we know, thank God, I used to wonder what would happen if my dad was proved wrong, but now we know that when we brought the jaw and the tongue down and forward, we were actually opening the airway and we were changing sleep architecture by having the patient wear our bite plate at night. It wasn't that we fixed the TMJ. It really had to do with probably a combination of oxygen, giving the patient more oxygen, less intermittent hypoxia, as well as giving them more stage 3 sleep and more REM sleep. So, I mean, this shows you it was serendipitous.
Yeah, exactly.
But it just showed us we were kind of in the right place, and it's just gotten better from there.
So it was the right solution, but it wasn't a complete understanding of the rationale, which you have come to discover. So how might one of our listeners discover whether they have something called SDB, sleep disordered breathing? And first of all, how prevalent is this? Is this a rare phenomenon, or is it
no.
pretty common?
This, you know, as we've gained weight, as society's gained weight, and really what's happened is as our brains have gotten bigger, our faces have gotten pushed in, our sinuses have gotten smaller, our nasal breathing has gotten worse, our dental arches have collapsed a la, you know, work with nutrition and epigenetic factors, and some people refer to Weston Price's work, which was, many years ago, but it really makes a lot of sense. You kind of know for a couple of reasons. One, most people are in denial. So if you ask most men if they snore, they'll deny it. They'll say they don't have a problem. But well, if you're
maybe
tired,
they're just used to feeling lousy. You know, they're just it's so prevalent.
Yeah, they're used to feeling,
I'm older, I'm this, I'm that. You know,
it's aging. So the first thing we look at is fatigue. I'm tired. I'm just tired all the time. I'm not refreshed on awakening. So I'd say that's probably the number one thing. Chronic fatigue. I'm not refreshed. I don't get refreshing sleep. You know, I wake up 3, 4, 5 times a night. I turn over a lot. That's what you hear that. You hear that a lot. And so that's the first thing. You know, most people, I think, that are overweight probably do have some sort of sleep disorder. So there's a number of things that we look at. People that have small jaws. And there's such an overlap with people that have TMJ. And there's furthermore, there's this huge overlap with people who have what we used to call fibromyalgia.
Mm-hmm.
So there are these functional somatic syndromes that we're looking at now. And a lot of these are thin women. Their brains just don't get down into deep sleep. So it's most obvious, I guess, if you snore, there's a pretty good chance that you have one of these sleep disorders. And it may not just be snoring, it may be a sign of something that we call sleep apnea.
Right. So let's distinguish. Are we just talking about OSA, obstructive sleep apnea, or is this a casting a wider net among people who might go for a sleep study? It's called plethysmography, and they might be reassured, no, you don't have obstructive sleep apnea, but maybe they have a form of sleep-disordered breathing that's just not picked up with a sleep study. Is that possible?
That's exactly right. So there are even some women that don't really snore. They have what we call resisted breathing. And then there's people that would admit that they snored, but they don't realize that they actually stop breathing for 10 seconds to 20 to 30, up to 90 seconds at a time. And they either stop breathing 100%, which is called apnea, or something called hypopnea, which is a partial obstruction and can be also associated with the drop in oxygen. So now we have these things called Fitbits, right? And we have all these types of wearables.
Mm-hmm.
And now that we have wearables and we have things that you like Bedit that you can put across your bed, and what it's measuring, some of them measure the movement, how we turn over a lot. Some of them are measuring sonic waves, they're measuring sounds. We have or other units that can measure our oxygen all night long. So we're now able to really get a better insight into what's really physiologically happening with our body through these wearables. And we're noticing, you know, some of them saying that they're measuring deep sleep, but we're really getting feedback that after we eat too much, eat too late, or we had a couple of drinks. And people are really starting to see, wow, I didn't sleep well. You know what? When I don't sleep well, I feel pretty lousy. But like you said, the polysomnography and the home sleep testing, it's really the best way to diagnose this. And we work with board-certified physicians that after we get these sleep tests, it's read by a physician that's board-certified in sleep, and we get a recommendation at that point for treatment. But it's not always so easy to tease out. And as I said, you know, men are in denial and women speak in code. Most women are not going to come in and tell you that they snore or that they have a sleep problem.
So, but the symptoms are more pervasive than just waking up and feeling like you've been run over by a truck. There's a whole panoply of symptoms that could be related to sleep-disordered breathing in adults as well as children,
doubt.
Right?
Yes. So one of them would be even periodic leg movement. It could be morning headache. You know, a lot of people have morning headache or foggy brain. Morning headache is one of the classic signs of sleep apnea. How about irritability, memory loss, decreased attention and concentration? And, you know, hopefully we'll talk a little bit in kids, but, you know, this type of executive dysfunction or inattentiveness starts at 3 or 4. And some people label it as something called ADD, when in fact it may not be ADD at all, but just a sleep disorder in children. So, you know, that inattentiveness can continue, and we see it in adulthood as just decreased attention and inability to concentrate. So that leads to performance deficiencies, Other people, it expresses itself as anxiety, and it can express itself as a form of depression, which is just a bunch of words that are put together, but that's what it's expressed as.
Could it lead to more profound or dangerous health problems?
Oh, yeah. So we haven't even talked about cardiovascular disease. That is huge. Cerebrovascular stroke, heart attack, of course, diabetes, and a lot of these chronic illnesses are associated with, all the oxidative stress and endothelial dysfunction. But there's a ton of, yes, chronic disease is a big part, and there's a huge association between sleep apnea and cardiovascular disease.
Now, you say in the book, and there's a very interesting chapter on how this is a modern disease that wasn't so much a feature of our pre-human ancestors.
That's right.
You say that human evolution, that sort of the reconfiguration of the human jaw and facial anatomy, as well as our eating habits, have somehow changed our airwaves. Can you explain?
Absolutely. So if you've been lucky enough, or you've ever been to the Museum of Natural History or Smithsonian, or you've just seen a picture of primitive man, Cro-Magnon man, you notice that you've got this broad skull, you've got this protruding snout, this big upper jaw, this wide lower jaw, this wide nose. This person did not have a breathing problem. This person might have died of infection, an infected tooth, but this patient, he didn't snore, he was refreshed on awakening, and so just the physical characteristics of the jaw, the nose, the upper jaw, the lower jaw, it's just classic for someone that has had a great airway. So in comparison today, our faces are pushed in like the bulldog's face. And most of us have retrognathia. We have a small lower jaw. We've got a narrow nose. Mm-hmm. And we become mouth breathers. A lot of us have become mouth breathers, where in the past our ancestors were all nose breathers. So that's the type of thing that we look for, and that is associated with now sleep apnea. So receded chin, small lower jaw. Our tongues are getting bigger, but there's no place for the tongue to go, so it's forced back into the airway.
And this has something to do with the conditioning that kids, as they develop, don't undergo when they chew soft baby food and they eat refined foods, as opposed to the arduous chewing that our prehistoric ancestors underwent.
Absolutely. So the diet, and we consider diet, pollution, other epigenetic factors, but diet is a big part of that. Not only the sugar in the diet, but just the consistency of the diet does not lead itself to the development of big jaws and open airways.
Mm-hmm.
It's well said.
Yeah. So now, according to the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, they say that sleep-disordered breathing causes disrupted and inefficient sleep. So they acknowledge it, which in turn results in not only fatigue and daytime sleepiness, but also cognitive impairment and poor performance in school. They say if a child gets to bed, quote, early enough, then they could still have problems with fatigue, focus, and learning. I mean, they say the problem with kids is they spend too much time on social media, on Snapchat. They're texting under the covers at night. They're watching videos. But part of the problem with a kid who's performing poorly and can't focus may be that they have an airway problem.
Exactly, and we look at the work of Karen Bonnick. She looked at, 12,000 kids over 6 years, and she found that the kids that were mouth breathers, the kids that snored, the kids that had sleep apnea, were between 60 and 100% more apt at age 4 and 7 to be inattentive, to have either aggressive behavior or withdrawal behavior, not to get along with their peers, as well as an anxiety and depression. So we know quite well that what happens early on, and a lot of kids have allergies. Yeah. Kids develop, tonsils and adenoids. When we were kids, or now when I was a kid, at around 5 or 6, all the kids had their tonsils out. Yeah. That stopped around 25, 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And so it's actually thought that in some cases a tonsillectomy and a TNA,
right,
tonsillectomy and adenoidectomy, helps airway problems. I mean, there's, I've looked in kids' mouths sometimes, you know, when I was in my pediatrics rotation, and there's practically no room for the air to get by because the tonsils are, you know, like walnut size.
Oh, it's like, yeah. And they're kissing, almost kissing tonsils. And so if we speak to the orthodontic community, we know that palatal expansion, if we would start it when the kid was 3.5, 3, 4 years old, the combination of an adenotonsillectomy, TNA, combined with palatal expansion, combined with a little myofunctional therapy and allergy treatment, really would take care of this problem and probably prevent a lot of kids from ever becoming snorers or apneic. So people like Christian Guimanol and myself, we believe that this is a problem that can be prevented. You start early, open up the airway, and you kind of make the kid into like a paleo, you know, the bone moves so easily that early in life that you can make the child into more of a horizontal grower, almost like what we would say is Lefort 1, but we can really achieve more horizontal growth and not become such a long, have such a long face and promote that kind of growth.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, there's a wonderful illustration of this. I don't know if it's posted at your website. It's certainly obtainable. A video, Finding Connor Deegan.
Oh, God,
can you tell us about that? That's a remarkable story of a kid who was kind of relegated to the trash heap in terms of his potential.
Yeah, Connor was just misbehaving, and he was getting D's and F's, and he'd say, I just want to die. Why don't you just let me die? The mother knew that he's really a good kid, and she couldn't really find an answer. And she went and she saw, you know, my friends in Chicago, Steve Sheldon and Kevin Boyd, and they finally did a sleep study which showed that he had sleep apnea. And they found that he had these large tonsils and adenoids, and his jaw was so far back that his tongue was obstructing the airway. So he saw an allergist, he got his tonsils and adenoids out, he had palatal expansion bioblock type therapy with Kevin Boyd, and all of a sudden, her son came back to her. Connor Deegan was found again. He showed up. He started getting A's and B's. He's a lovely kid today. And so it was all about his sleep. When he walked to school, he had to pass maybe 10 varieties of trees. He was allergic to all 10 varieties of those trees. So it's a combination. It's really a great, it's Ron, for us, for a physician and a dentist, this is a great area to collaborate in, or for a functional medicine specialist who was into fatigue reversal, biochemical refreshment, immune function, memory, psychological well-being. Can't really think, nutrition we could say the same thing for, but if you look at the functions of sleep, it's such a great way to really achieve the wellness that we're looking for. It's very profound.
It's certainly a missed element in diagnosing patients with challenging health problems. I remember one patient that I had who bedeviled me for a while because he was doing all the right things. He was eating great. He was exercising like crazy. And he had very, very profound hypertension. We couldn't figure out what was going on. We did all the workups possible. And finally, and I thought of this belatedly, you would have thought of this up front, I asked his wife who was with him, I said, does he snore by any chance? And she rolled her eyes and she said, boy, does he snore. I've got to sleep in a separate bedroom. And we sent him for a sleep study. And it turned out that he had obstructive sleep apnea, which contributed to his hypertension. Now, I think a lot of physicians don't know the connection. Why would having breathing problems at night contribute to high blood pressure?
Well, the sympathetic nervous system. You know, you're not breathing. So now it's 10 seconds, and now it's 20 seconds, and now it's 30 seconds. Basically, you're putting your body under such a stressful situation. You're activating that fight or flight, that sympathetic nervous system. And basically, the body's going to say, look, buddy, you're either going to breathe, you better take a breath now, or it's not going to end up so well. And so that sympathetic nervous system stays activated even in the morning. You know, you talk about coming back to the cave, you know, you've been out slaying dragons all day and dinosaurs. When you come back to the cave at the end of the night, you're supposed to be able to chill out. You're supposed to go into like a parasympathetic state. Mm-hmm. But these people that have sleep apnea every night and are snoring every night, their nervous systems get so jacked up in a sympathetic state that their blood pressure really remains elevated all day. And it never goes back to that relaxed or sympathetic state. So
they're in a perpetual alarm state, which could contribute to a wide variety of problems, because we know that high levels of cortisol, high levels of adrenaline, if the body is bathed in these hormones continuously, this is a very deleterious effect on many organ systems, on the brain,
absolutely,
on the heart, the circulatory system, and so on.
And just if you look at inflammation, we know that when you have sleep apnea, these inflammatory cytokines, you know, interleukin-6, tumor necrosis factor, alpha, everything, these inflammatory factors get released throughout the body. And so you're really in a state of inflammation, which can affect everything. You have higher pain levels, and, it's that combined with the endothelial dysfunction and oxidative stress. It really leads to many, many chronic problems.
Hmm. Okay, this is a good point at which to pause, because as our listeners know, we divide our podcast into two parts. Today, we're talking to pioneering dentist, Dr. Michael Gelb. He's also the co-inventor of various devices that aim to correct airway disorders. We'll talk about those in part two. He's authored numerous journal articles and book chapters to share his knowledge, and he's sharing his knowledge with us today about the problem of sleep disordered breathing and airway problems. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine Podcast.